and their fall tolerance properties. This is joint work with David DiVincenzo and Barbara Chernow. And I'll just give you an outline of the talk. I'm going to spend first third of the talk just sort of motivating the problem and talking about the relationship to our work and some of the framework that I'm going to use to put these numerical results into. Then I'll talk about the constructions. Just some of this will be reviewed, but how exactly we construct the rectangles, how we do the simulation, and then what codes are included in this code survey. And finally, I'll show you many numerical results in sort of two different categories, where I look at the threshold versus the block size of the code and the threshold versus the overhead of the code. So of course, solve quantum quantum computing schemes use concatenated codes. And the goal of using concatenated codes, of course, is to, well, we have sort of three goals, and they're not always compatible. We want to achieve noise rates that are comparable to digital computers, something like 10 to the minus 15 final error rate. We want to balance noise tolerance with overhead. I mean, whatever, so balance is a pretty vague word, right? But this, in practice, there's going to be some trade-off that we need to strike between the two. And of course, we need to obtain an acceptable noise threshold, where again, acceptable is going to depend on the particular system that we're studying. So it seems that several codes will be needed in practice to achieve these goals, possibly several different codes. And so that's how I'd like to begin thinking about this. In a hierarchy of concatenated codes, we would encode the logical, the computational qubits in some outer code. This outer code would probably have high rate and low distance. Low distance because we don't necessarily need a large threshold. And then possibly we need some middle codes. Don't know what particular trade-off between rate and distance would be proper there. And finally, some inner code, which it seems should have low rate and high distance, perhaps. And so this code would encode one of these qubits into N. And then we would be down at the physical level. Now, at the physical levels, for this talk, I'm going to assume that we've done everything in our power to balance the X and Z error rates and to make the noise look roughly independent here. So the idea is the inner code would take us from 10 to the minus 2 or 10 to the minus 4 to 10 to the minus 8. And then from there, perhaps just with one other code, we'd reach 10 to the minus 15. So we really desire just a few levels in this hierarchy. Now, that's an awful lot to study in a code study. So we're just going to focus on the inner code for this talk. So codes with low rate, encoding one qubit even for most of these codes. Into n qubits. And the hope will be that we can find a code that takes us to 10 to the minus 8. Now, as far as I know, the only detailed survey of many, many codes is Steen's paper, this overhead and noise threshold paper from 2002. And in this paper, Steen studied the Steen and Golay codes numerically and then extrapolated from these a model, which he applied to many other codes. And in this study, there are just a couple observations. I mean, there are many more. There's a lot of information in this paper, but the three things I'd just like to point out would be that Steen observes that the threshold increases from the Steen to Golay code and then decreases thereafter. And the point of view that he took was that really we want sort of a one-level architecture, balance of rate and distance. And he settled on a code such as this with some balance between rate and distance. Now, in this study, Steen studied many, many BCH codes and quadratic residue codes and whatnot. So why do another code study at all? And the main reason, the most important reason from my point of view for doing this study is that we have now a rigorous theory based on extended rectangles that holds for any minimum distance. And the prior code study is not directly compatible with this. It would be nice to have a framework, to have a set of numerical results that we can compare directly with this rigorous theory, and that we can also in the future add to and be able to compare these different codes. Other reasons to continue with another code survey, is that we have other families of codes to consider, and we can simulate more codes now, you know, 5 years later. So. Now, my perspective, I have sort of two questions that I'd like to focus on. One relationship is between the threshold and the block size of these inner codes. Of course, we have this threshold lower bound, given by the number of locations in the extended rectangle, and then this T naught parameter, which is sort of the effective distance of the code. Okay, so this this is usually going to be T. It could be 2. It could be 1. And I'd just like to point out just the broad picture here. Suppose that we have a family of codes where the effective distance is linear in the block size. So T naught over n is some constant for a family of codes. And some examples. Classically, the repetition codes do this. Quantumly, there's evidence that the toric codes have this property. And so what we have is, if also we have some linear number of locations in the extended rectangle, then if we look at the threshold versus the block size, you know, it reaches some limit. This is, yeah?
That's a great question, but please finish your slide first.
Oh, all right. All right. Well, anyway, but this, you know, I don't know of any case where this happens, right? Usually, this A of n is some, say it's quadratic in n. In which case, this limit is 0, and there's some maximum here. And so one thing I'd like to identify is, where is this? If we look at a lot of different codes, where is this point? So I'm sorry if you...
Yeah, so why is this actually a lower bound, what we have there? So for me, it seems what you are assuming is that just, well, above the code distance, or whatever it is, half the code distance, the lowest contributing order of the error, all possible error configurations really lead to a logical error. But sort of from me looking at this, it seems that the higher orders are not included, right? Why is this a bound? Why is this not an estimate?
I believe this is a bound.
It's about higher order charge.
So the reason is because if you look at the probability of having exactly t errors, then it's going to be that constant, well, without the exponent, times p to the t times 1 minus p to the n minus t.
Yes.
If you throw in a 1 minus p term, then it becomes a bound on all the higher
so
orders.
So you're throwing away that sort of overcompensates for the higher orders.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
But I think this is also meant to be a kind of a rough estimate how things scale,
yeah,
not like the optimal boundary.
Yeah, this is just an idea. I mean, I just want to point is this, going out to a very, very large end is probably not going to help, and there's some point here that we'd like to identify. Now, the other question I'd like to think about is the threshold versus the overhead. Now, I'm not going to use a typical definition of overhead here. What I'm going to call overhead is the number of controlled NOT gates in a rectangle. So in a one rectangle. And this will give us some idea of the size of the circuit and how it might scale. So in particular, the way that I'd like to focus on the overhead is I'd like to look at how it grows with some parameters. Of course, the block size. Of course, the effective error correcting capability of the code, because we'd have to do more checking of the ancillary, so we may need more control knots for that. And also, the important one here is the number of preparation attempts. We'll fix a constant number of preparation attempts, and look at the threshold we can achieve with that number of preparation attempts. So the picture we'll have is this overhead parameter, and we'll have the threshold, and we'll have a curve for each code that we get. And this, if you increase the number of preparation attempts to some high value, of course you reach the limiting value of the threshold. And down here you have some failure rate that's due to the failing ancilla. So we want to know, at a given overhead, if we pick a point here, which code should we use, something like that.
What do you mean by effective error correcting?
Oh, Okay, thank you. So, in ideally, we'd like to design the rectangle so that any set of T or fewer faults will not be malignant. But the rectangles that I'll use, I'll show you, don't strictly obey that property. So it could be that there are this value of T naught is somewhat smaller than that.
So you mean that this is taking into account the average case distribution of the errors, or?
Yeah, this will be all average, yes.
Okay, so yeah.
I'll try to make it more clear. Yeah. All right, and then, well, we'll see some region here. I've just drawn it as a triangle where the threshold we can't achieve with a given. Okay. All right, so here's the sort of the construction technique for all of the circuits that we use. Studying an extended rectangle with error corrections and a gate here. And the error correction circuits that we'll use are Skene error correction. So I'm not using teleported error correction, I think, but just an X and Z syndrome extraction. And the part of the circuit that depends on the code, of course, the ancilla preparation. So we need to prepare two types of ancilla, and preparing them is sort of consists of two steps: encode them and test them. And one or both of these can depend on the code. All right, so first, encoding. This may be familiar to many of you. So if I don't have a better way of encoding an ancilla, so if I don't know a particularly compact circuit, then what I default to in this study is Skene's Latin rectangle method. So in this method, what you do is you take the generator matrix for the particular code that you need, say C2 perp, and put it in systematic form. And then the algorithm is simply to place, you construct a bipartite graph, place three nodes on the left for each of the first three columns, and four nodes on the right for the last columns here, and then connect each node, say the first node, with the nodes where there's a one in this A part of the matrix, right? And then you color the edges on this graph. So, right? And so each one of these colors gives me a time step, and then I can insert the waiting locations into the circuit, more or less sort of automatically. All right. Now the testing part, I'm going to do something that's perhaps a little inefficient for some of these codes. What I'm going to do is take this circuit where we sort of compare copies of ancilla. So we test for X errors, test for X errors, test for Z errors. And then what we'll do is we have just two knobs to turn. One knob is how many times do we repeat this? Call that R, how many stages. And it's sufficient, at least, to make R something like T if we want to be able to detect all of these, if we want to have a circuit that's strictly fault tolerant. And the other knob that we'll turn is the number of parallel preparation attempts. So let's say, try to prepare it twice, three times, 10 times. I don't think ever more than 30 times. So just to summarize this, we're going to look at control knob extended rectangles of codes encoding roughly one qubit. There's only one example where we encode more than one qubit. We're going to use Skene error correction, and sort of two knobs to turn the number of stages of error detection and the number of preparation attempts. And then some notes about the construction. If I don't make R large enough, it's possible that the circuit is fault tolerant, but not strictly fault tolerant. So maybe I catch very many of these higher order errors, but there may be some that are not detected. There's one example where I will vary R. The other is that, of course, the extended rectangles are not optimized. For example, if the code is perfect, I don't take advantage of that. If the code has a very nice encoder and I don't know about it, I don't take advantage of that. Really, the circuits could be improved, just to keep that in mind. And then, of course, I'm not thinking about locality at all here. So now I'll talk about the simulation method. The property that I'm testing is just what is the probability that the rectangle is not correct. I think this has probably been discussed earlier, so I won't spend too long on it. The idea is if you push this one decoder through the rectangle, if you're left with an ideal gate here, then you consider that correct. We want to estimate the probability that the one rec is not correct for depolarizing noise. So we'll place some random depolarizing faults in the circuit, estimate this probability. And the nice thing about doing this is that there's no need to repeat the gates first to find some steady state distribution here or here. It's taken care of by the one rec. And I can tell you that it took care to make sure that we've been technically correct here. I can tell you more about it later. In the way that we treat the input errors and whatnot. So just an example of what the raw data would look like for one of these codes. What we have, so there are two axes here. This is the physical, say, or base error probability. This is for depolarizing fault. And this is the level one error probability. It's the probability that the one rectangle is incorrect. And so what we do is fix one of these, fix P0, and then collect many, many samples and find an estimate for this point with some standard error. And then just compute a local polynomial fit through here and sample from these local polynomial fits to estimate the threshold here. What we'll call this, so this is a quasi threshold, it's just a level one threshold, and we'll estimate that with some standard error as well. All right, so now maybe the interesting part, what codes are going to be included in this comparative study? Well, only CSS codes, it's kind of clear from the instructions that I showed, they only work in this case. And they fall into roughly sort of like 3.5 categories. First, we'll look at, say, 4 vacant short codes. We'll look at a few of the planar codes to compare these two. And then many of the codes that, well, then 3 of the doubly even dual containing codes. We'll look at the skiing code, the lay code, and the next code in the series. And finally, one polynomial code used in sort of the simplest way, which is these are codes on qudits, and we'll just try to choose a basis for that qudit so that we get a binary CSS code, but we'll decode it as a polynomial. All right. So I'll tell you exactly what's in the zoo now. So we have 4 vacant short codes of odd edge sizes. These are their parameters, n, k, and d. They're all decoded the same way with some kind of majority voting. We have 3 planar codes because that already takes us up to near a block size of 100. And so there are parameters, and these are decoded by matching the defects.
So you are still using the planar codes in a recursive construction?
So
if you fix the size, you sort of, you plan to concatenate them.
I won't.
Or the threshold result.
I'm only looking at the first level. So I'm only looking at, Okay. Well, and then the Steen-Golay codes. This is just another way of saying I'm doing a table lookup and using the fact that these are cyclic codes. And then looking at the sort of the next code in the series, some quadratic residue code. And this decoder is very complicated, but it's possible to do. Looking at the concatenated Steen code and decoding it with a lookup table and passing some flags. And then finally, this polynomial code, which at the end of the day ends up looking like a 60-qubit code, distance 10, encoding 4 qubits. And this can also be decoded by a table lookup just over a different field. All right, so it's rather amazing. I ended up going much faster than I thought I would. Maybe no one will mind. So All right. So the first case I'm going to look at is just if we have perfect ancilla. It's not realistic, but it gives us some idea of the maximum achievable thresholds with these codes. So now let me tell you what these curves are. So this blue curve up here is these 3 points correspond to the Steen code, the Vallée code, and the 47111 code. And so here you see it's nearly achieving 1%. This yellow curve here passing through these 3 points corresponds to the surface codes. And now I just as a sanity check, this continues out. Of course, it reaches some limit here. And then finally, this red curve, the Bacon short codes. And I expect that this will fall off here because the distance properties of these codes. I've simulated just a small sample out here to see if that's the case. Finally, these 2 points, this is concatenated Steen code, and this is the polynomial code. Now let's look at it with ancilla that are not perfect. Now these are sort of I've extracted the largest threshold that I could see with the largest overhead, the largest number of preparations I could single. So in some cases, this is not as high as the maximum you would expect if you took if you went out to many, many more preparations. Again, this curve is the Steen, Golay, and 47111 code. So the Steen kind of the Golay code stands out here. And then this is the surface code here. And this is the Bacon short code here. And then these 2 points is the concatenated Steen code with some small, on the order of 30 preparation attempts. And same with the polynomial code here.
Can we understand the flatness of Bacon short due to the non-scaling of ancilla size?
I think that's fair. Well, what's going to happen here is the next point is down here. I have gone out farther. I mean, this goes back down, essentially immediately after this. Now, I should say there. So there's a different encoder for the surface codes, which I'm not using. I'm using the Latin rectangle encoder, and it's possible that the same scaling may appear with the surface codes using this different encoder. I should just say that. I don't know.
So these are all done with same arrays for all gates. And
yes. Yeah. Right. So now I'm just going to show you if there are no locations in the circuit for memory, then so I'm just going to add. now it gets kind of messy, but right. So we have some factor 3/2 increase in the Golay code in sort of all these codes uniformly, a small increase in the Bacon short codes, and a rather significant increase in the surface codes. I think that's kind of interesting. I suspect that maybe I should look at this other encoder, because this gap is much larger than these other two. Well, say like a factor of 2.
So you turned off memory errors there?
Yeah, that's what it.
But in your previous plot, the memory error was a tenth of the error, right?
In all cases, memory error is the same.
Oh, you took
I've said the same, yeah. All right, and now, so this is the last assault of data. So I'm going to look at, so this is the second sort of question. Here's the threshold again, and this is the number of physical C-naughts per rectangle. Now, again, these things are not optimized, so these numbers may be somewhat larger than you could get if you try hard. Like, for example, there are some very nice ways of reducing the number of control knots in the Golay code in Ben Reinhardt's thesis. So I'll just go from in order of increasing block size, and I won't beat it over your head too much. For each code, there will be two curves, with exception of the GoLay code, and I'll talk about that when we get there. But this is, again, with and without memory. That's what these two curves are. And the knob that I'm turning here to get these different points is the number of preparation attempts. It's a constant number of preparation attempts at each point. All right. So I only need one attempt for the Bacon Shore code. It's right there. And the surface code. This is the first one. Now I'm going to rescale the horizontal axis because the overhead begins to get larger. Okay. So we're adding the GoLay code now. This is with and without memory. And these three curves here are all for the GoLay code, but they're varying that R parameter. So this is R as 1, 2, and 3. I just wanted to see this variation. And the idea is that, of course, if we went out farther, it's possible these converge to very nearly the same point. I don't know. And also, we would expect that possibly the scaling of the final error rate is better for this curve. All right. So what I want to point out, I'm going to add the rest of these rather quickly. But if you watch right here, I mean, this is the part of the curve that we're most interested in, is what can't we reach and what is possible. And you should imagine that these curves, in most cases, I've computed them to the point where they turn over. That's even true here, even though you can't see it. So you should imagine this line continuing until it sort of hits the next line. All right, so this is the next surface code. Then down here, this is the 47.111. So again, this is exactly what Steen saw, which is that beyond the GoLay code, in this particular family anyway, it appears that the threshold falls and perhaps continues. Or, we need many more preparation attempts before we begin to see these two look similar. All right, that was so that's the next Bacon Shore code here. The concatenated Steen code here, this is again for something like 30 preparation attempts. Now, the polynomial code, it's up right here. This is, I only have one point with memory errors. The next Bacon Shore code, and the next surface code. So, for all these codes considered, looks like if you start from low overhead and continue out here, you would sort of progress from the 9-qubit code to the 7-qubit code, to two Bacon Shore codes, and then the GoLay code, as far as achieving a large threshold for a given overhead. And this appears to be something like 2 times 10 to the minus 3, or 3 if we don't have memory faults. So quite prematurely, we reached the end of the talk, where It's quite different when I went through it before. I'll just summarize these 3 points. So the GoLay code performs well in this study, with this threshold without memory errors, 3 times 10 to the minus 3, and this is perhaps a large overhead. We need to continue. I'll tell you about it in a second. Also, as the overhead increases, right, we progress through a series of codes, where for a slightly larger overhead, we can increase the threshold. Finally, it was interesting that the planar codes are comparable to the GoLay code when memory locations are neglected. It suggests that if we change the encoder here, perhaps we'll see something interesting. And finally, so what remains to be done, really? What I ought to be doing as well, at least as is possible, to look at the final failure rates versus the initial failure rates to see how this is scaling. And perhaps most interestingly, given this morning's talk, compare with the Knill scheme and Fibonacci scheme, and see when these methods are put right next to each other, how they compare with each other. And then finally, there are, of course, other levels of this hierarchy to look at and to think about how to combine the data that we get in a way that we can make predictions. So, yeah, I'll end it.
I have a question. You turned off memory errors, but I think experimentalists would like to see you turn more errors on. So, for instance, in your outlook, you're not considering communication. You're assuming non-local gates, and you might want. Well, I would be tempted to look at the same kind of data set, but now with some kind of penalty, either a constant penalty to transport information from one location to another, from one physical location to another physical location, or a penalty that increases because you're using, say, swaps. So you have a penalty that, an error that increases with distance, and then your promised land threshold, and it gets kind of, that promised land gets bigger and more unattainable in some sense.
Yeah, that's right. Right. And the big shortcuts become even more appealing.
Well, I think the idea also is that Andrew is going to put some of the software that is written in on a website. And I mean, because I think these studies should be done with one methodology. Everybody says, I have an interesting code, or I want to study the non-local model. You take the package, you put in your error model with the, and then you just run. And I think that's sort of the start. That's why we did the study to start that up.
So. Before getting into questions of accessibility of your actual codes and things with people in the community, I'm actually curious if you've looked at the going beyond the pseudo-threshold criterion for any of these scenarios or have any idea of how you're going to do it. Particularly, there's a question sort of self-similarity to the error model as you move from the Gantt model offered. So have you looked at that at all, or how does it play out?
Yeah, so just two comments. Of course, as the code's distance gets large, it becomes very hard to study adversarial noise. I mean, it was prohibited, and that's why we changed strategies. In other studies where we look at the same code concatenated with itself, it's not unreasonable to use a depolarizing model at the first level and then look at adversarial noise at higher levels. The other comment, too, is that if indeed, the way to do this is to have some inner code like one of these, and then the low distance outer code, then it may be possible to actually count all of these things. And so we could have an adversarial noise model at this next level and put the two together that way. So,
but you haven't done that?
I haven't done that, no.
And how do your numbers compare to Sheen?
They are similar. So it was interesting, actually. I mean, one of the reasons, another reason why we started doing this was to see how different the Monte Carlo simulation method is from a more rigorous counting method. And I mean, they really, at this point, they really are comparable. So Steen and this study, they're comparable. And indeed, if you do Monte Carlo sampling of the higher order faults, and add those sampling estimates to the counting bound, then that bound approaches these results.
So all the codes you looked at were CSS codes, right?
Yes.
So, but have you thought of looking at kind of 5-qubit code or other non-CSS codes?
I haven't. No, I haven't.
But I mean, the problem is, how are you going to do the schema? It's very hard to.
Well, it's.
I mean, what gate are you going to do the cube?
No, but at least nil error correction can be done using general stabilizer codes. And so
yeah,
once you build ancillas, then you're okay. So it's more work on ancillas, but, 5-qubit code is probably better in some ways than 7-qubit code, right? It's smaller.
What do you mean, the more work on the ancillas to make to do the gate?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you're going to pay for that, I think, in the threshold directly. So
well, that's why I asked.
Yeah. But, you have to be, this takes a lot of time. So I think if this, you know, we put the stuff, we put that on the website, if anybody can go ahead and, you know, is invited to add more codes that they may think is interesting. I mean, I agree it's interesting to do, but we've decided to settle on the CSS because the obvious reason is that there's a chance that they can get this professional, but we are not sure.
Well, let's thank the speaker again.